Get ready for the Girls on Games podcast, your weekly dose of news, reviews, and everything video games. Always served with a good helping of hype and just a pinch of salt. And now, your host, Leah.
Welcome to another Girls on Games podcast. My name is Leah. I'm the host of this show. This is episode number 445. Games, and more games are what we're talking about this week. Why? We've been playing loads of them, including Botany Manor, Princess Peach Showtime, and Tales of Kinzera Zao, and more, of course. But before we get into all of that, I want to introduce you to the friendly voices around this digital table. Reunited and it feels so good.
Beep, 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 beep.
Catherine, what's up?
Hello.
And we've got Joelle.
Hello, hello, hello. It's just been a week. It honestly feels like forever.
Well, I mean, we missed each other.
Like passing ships in the night.
That's true.
I'm going to say, though, when I was thinking about, you know, like how to intro and stuff here today, I had a hard debate of what song it was gonna go to, if it was gonna be Reunited and Feel So Good, or It's Gonna Be May, because it's gonna be May.
It's true.
And this comes out on the 2nd of May.
Gonna be May. I will still say that when I'm 80.
Where did April go?
I don't know. March felt like it was 10 years long, yet yeah. April was like, snap, I'm gone, bye. I guess that's with like vacations and then getting back at it. And then, of course, all the games we're playing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Let's get through some housekeeping before the crew check in. I'd like to remind you, if you enjoy this show, you can subscribe. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Podbean. If you'd like to get some GOG merch, you can do that by going to designbyhumans.com/shop/girlsongames. Maybe you'd like to give us a tip, maybe buy us a coffee. You can do that by going to our Ko-fi. That's ko-fi.com/girlsongames. Not going to lie, I almost started to laugh because Joelle started bopping her head along with the rhythm that I always say, the housekeeping.
Sorry, I think it was just like happiness. And like great rhythm, and I'm like, feeling it, doing it, yeah.
I'm like reading it out of the corner of my eye, and I see you bopping along, and I'm like, oh, I'm gonna screw this up now. It's all good. Oh my goodness, Joelle. Since I caught you here, you're already talking. How was your week? What have you been up to?
Oh man, I've been up to so many things because it's been a hot minute. Yeah, so. I have things to say. So first of all, it's, you know, there's some really neat little gem experiences that I get to experience living in Minneapolis. And one of them is that there's a ramen restaurant in a place called Uptown, and they brew their own sake at this restaurant.
Ooh.
And the next closest brewer of sake to Minneapolis is Arkansas. So like this is the only one like around. And you got a ticket to do a private tasting with the brewer. And so we went on it was a Sunday night, so it was out on a school night, but we
went crunk on a school night.
We went and they gave us samples of 9 different sakes, and they went in detail through the process of how they like ferment and brew the sake, because they make it out of rice. And so that was super fun. And
was that last night?
No, it was. It was a few. Yeah, unfortunately, it was not last night. It was a few weekends ago, and then. The other really cool thing that I did is that once a year, the Minneapolis Institute of Arts, or the MIA, they have a four-day exhibit where they take pieces that are already in the museum, and they have flower arrangement artists do an interpretation of that art piece, and it's called Art in Bloom, and it's free to the public, and it's packed with people because it's so cool. So you go and you can go through all the exhibit halls, and you see these flower installations that are taken from these pieces, and the creativity is just like off the charts. They have, I think, let me try to, how many pieces are in Bloom, but it's, I think it's in, it must be like 100.
Whoa. And are they like large?
They can be different sizes. Like it's kind of up to the, it's up to the, interpretation of the artist. There are some, pieces that are sponsored by, Bachmann's or some larger corporations. That are fairly big because they are like sponsored, and so they, you know, can afford larger pieces. But this year they had over 160 floral displays, and they're all fresh florals. And sometimes the artists are there, and they talk about their pieces. And they choose a lot of different wings of the museum to do it. So some of them are, like, contemporary. Some of them are, modern art. Some of them are from the there's a big wing of ancient Chinese art. So it's just a really fun thing to go to because – the MIA is always free to go, and so you can always go around and walk around and see what's there. It's just a nice little, injection of spring to go and to look and see how folks interpret different paintings and styles in flowers and flower arrangements. And, yeah, they can use kind of whatever. Sometimes they do a really cool thing, like with the vases and the different colors. Sometimes they do like a one for one where they try to recreate it as close as possible. And sometimes it's more like abstract. So if you're around the cities and you've never been to it, I highly recommend going. Like I said, it's free. It usually runs from like a Thursday to a Sunday. And it's really, really fun. And people get really into it. Like folks will like wear flower crowns, or they'll dress in flowers, or springtime. They'll have like big groups of people. You can do tours, and sometimes the artists are there next to their creations, like talking about it. Mm-hmm. And I've had a friend that's entered in. It's a lottery system, and she's been chosen to do it a few times, and it's just so fun. It's like a really cool exhibit. So it's just nice to go. It's just like, yes, it's spring, and like Art in Bloom is happening, and so very, very fun.
I'm looking at photos, and I'm just like, this is my kind of stuff. I love this so much. Mm-hmm.
There's a Party in Bloom. Party in Bloom, a magical event in the museum with food, drinks, flowers, and art, will take place 6:30 to 11:30 p.m. It was sold out.
Yeah, that sells out. Like, it's a little expensive to do that.
It's probably like donations and stuff to the museum, well, of course, too, is what pays, mm-hmm. it pays for.
Yeah, I think that one was like 300 something a ticket to do that party. That was a little stiff. but yeah, you can donate, and yeah, you can Google it online and see all the really cool inspirations. And there was one in the Chinese exhibit where it was they have a wedding kimono display, mm-hmm. where they show like the different layers of the kimono kind of mapped out like against a big wall. Mm-hmm. And then the artist had a rendition of it, and I thought that was my favorite because the hues of the kimono were like pinks and reds and purples and some green. And then they had these vases that were similar in shape to the kimono, kind of like a square, very straight lines and with some angles. And then the flowers really brought out the colors. And the flowers kind of were in similar patterns to the kimonos. It was just gorgeous. So, yeah, I wish they did it more than once a year, but it's also just a really fun, mm-hmm. Really fun thing to go to.
It was the 40th anniversary.
Yes.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, they've been doing it for quite a long time.
That's sick. What a cool idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need to go to the art gallery here more. There's a Banksy exhibit somewhere that I need to go see.
Oh, that's sick.
Yeah.
Yeah,
is it the traveling one?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh,
yeah.
That one's good.
My my in-laws went.
Yeah.
I think when it was in Ottawa. And they bought a t-shirt for Pascal as a Christmas gift.
Oh, that's cool.
From the Banksy exhibit.
And there's also a F1 exhibit in town.
Oh, snap.
Yeah. So that starts May 1st, I think. So I want to go see that.
Honestly, like, since the pandemic, like, I need to get back into exhibits again. Mm-hmm. Like, Pascal and I love a good exhibit.
You guys used to always go to the Botanical Gardens for the lanterns.
Yeah.
In the fall.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, in the Chinese garden, there's the Chinese lanterns, and they change the installation every year, and they make, it's around a theme, usually. And then the Japanese garden, they do a light show. So it's not like lanterns. It's more like projection and lights against the trees. Like, there's a big pond in the Japanese garden, and they do more like a, almost like a modern art installation. And usually we used to go because we used to live in that area, and then pandemic happened and we didn't go back. But yeah, my favorite thing was like just walking around, and then we'd finish the visit in the Japanese garden where we would grab like some green tea and some cookies. And then we would just sit and watch the light show happen around the pond for like a couple of minutes. But yeah. We used to do more like cultural stuff around the city, and it kind of like got to get back into that now that you know, the plague is
It is kind of weird just to be like, oh yeah, these things occur and like we can go to them.
And it's also learning that they exist too. Like, yeah. I find that like they're doing a better job now. Like, the fact that I know about the Banksy exhibit and the F1 exhibit is because they're advertising on social more so. And they're seeing, I don't know if it's because it's targeted, because obviously I like art. I like Banksy stuff. I want to go see that. And we are very much watching a lot of F1. So advertising helps. And when I found out about the Van Gogh exhibit, we went and saw that. That was more like a projection installation thing. That was really cool. That was like right after pandemic things started opening up. That was fun. That had circles on the floor that we could sit in and hang out.
Yeah, I saw that one when it was in Montreal. It was pretty good.
Yeah, good.
They had something like that in the cities too, and I went to that. And then the Banksy show I actually saw in Chicago, because I don't think it's come to Minneapolis yet. I think it is coming, but I saw it when I went to Chicago, and that was super cool.
I'm going to look to see where they're doing it.
Yeah, it's fun to get out. And also, I know you talked about this last week, but I finished the Fallout show on Prime.
Ooh, what'd you think? I still haven't had a chance to start it yet. Mike and I just haven't had time.
So good.
Yeah.
It's such a treat.
It's so good.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I wish, I haven't found anything yet, but I wish there was like a podcast or something to go along with it, because it reminds me of the caliber of like those HBO shows, like The Last of Us, like that type of, you know, high level storytelling and cinematography and all those things. And so I wish there was like that secondary content that I can consume, because I want more of it because it's so good.
But isn't it by the people who made Westworld?
Yeah, so it's Jonathan Nolan, which is Christopher Nolan's brother, who Nolan is like, you know, did The Dark Knight and Oppenheimer and that. So so it's the same family, and so it is. It is by that director and that studio. So yeah, it's amazing. Like, it's so well done, and the episodes are just in their own capsule of like genius. And I didn't play any of the Fallout games, but my boyfriend did, so it was really fun watching it with him, because he would maybe guess, or he'd be like, oh, I know what that is, or like, that's different than the game. And so it was really fun to watch and kind of listen to his thoughts and like reflections on it too. So, but it was it was great, and I love that you could watch it and not have any reference to the game, and it was still amazing.
exactly. They do their own world building, but just to confirm, it is Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy, and they did Westworld or produced her. So if you're like, if you want that Western, that's why there's that Western quality to follow. Mm-hmm. They nailed the Western quality.
Yeah, and I always felt like because the concept of like Fallout being like in the Midwest, it always kind of felt to me like it should be, it have like a Western-y kind of flavor to it, right?
Yeah.
I think it does. Like, the show definitely does.
No, but like even the game, doesn't it like even the songs that they have as the theme song and stuff, it's all like Midwestern, doesn't it not take place in like somewhere in the middle, like smack dab in the middle of America?
Yeah, because I was talking about it with Pascal, and basically he said that like in the world of Fallout, they kind of decided the cultural peak was the 50s and 60s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And because of like basically censorship and just like cultural control, they never grew out of that. Mm-hmm. So that's why a lot of the music in the series is that, and that's why it makes it feel kind of like either very retro pop, either very Western.
They call it retro futuristic.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's because I'm just looking at the plot from Fallout 4 because I'm trying to figure out exactly where Fallout 4 was taking place.
Yeah, retro. So it was like it's in the future, but the inspiration is very retro. So it's a world where basically they didn't like transistors didn't take a big place or don't exist. So like it's. So the world was very much dependent on oil still, and most of the technology was powered by nuclear power. So it just kind of like goes in a different direction. It's like if the United States never got rid of like their never left the Cold War,
mm-hmm. Yep,
for like 100 years, and it's very interesting. But like. Like, I completely agree with you, because that's the same thing I said last week, Joel, is like, you can watch the show and just enjoy it. And I think HBO Last of Us did that as well. Yeah.
Like, Mike really enjoyed it. He had no concept of what the game was about. I mean, my parents watched it. My dad was super intrigued by it, because he did his master's degree, which he didn't finish because he got into med school, but he was just, he only had his thesis left to write, and it was around parasitology and stuff.
Ooh.
So he was a little bit of a nerd for it.
Yeah, and I just want to give a shout out to, like, it's kind of nice. I've been a fan of Walton Goggins for a while.
Oh my god, he's so good in Sons of Anarchy.
Yes, he's so good in Sons of Anarchy. He, for those that, like, do... I would highly suggest anyone do a deep dive on Walton Goggins, his history, because like he is fantastic. Just his role in Justified, Vice Principals, that's on HBO, The Hateful Eight, The Righteous Gemstones, Son of Anarchy.
Righteous Gemstones. Have you ever watched The Righteous Gemstones?
It is
whack. Coming from for you, Joelle, because of the side with the whole religious thing, it is whack, and it cracks me up. I'm like, how are they religious and getting away with the shit they're getting away with?
You know, not surprising. his role in Django Unchained, you know, he was a villain in the Ant-Man movie. Just his catalog is deep, and I like, you will not be disappointed, because the range of this man is unlimited. And so when I saw him, I was just like, yes, like he's got, like, I just love this. I love this for him. Like, kudos to Walton Goggins. Like, I hope he gets recognized in some form for his role, 'cause it is so good.
Well, he's basically one of the main characters, because it's the story of three characters, right? Mm-hmm. You have Lucy the Vault Dweller, you have the ghoul, and then you have Maximus from the Brotherhood of Steel. I was going to say Titus, but that's a bit of a spoiler. Sorry. But yes, his name is Maximus. And what's great is all three characters, like all three stories, are amazing.
Do they converge?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
cool.
They converge. I love that. And then diverge.
I love when that happens. Like Crash, yes, where like all the stories and plot points.
But it's
or like
not,
Can't Hardly Wait.
Yeah, but yeah. It's like not to spoil. And like, I'm not even done. I'm just kind of like, I still have a few episodes to go. But it's like, it's the kind of thing where, yeah, they kind of like get all together. But at one point, like they break off.
Yeah.
They break off some more. It's like, it's not like building the story all the way to like the last episode where they finally meet. It's really just kind of like the story of these three people, and they meet, and then they go away, and then so it's very dynamic in that
That's
sense
cool.
And
it's very
video gamey,
mm-hmm,
where you kind of like meet NPCs and re-meet them and re-see them later, or you know, just kind of like, because you're bouncing between locations, you'll see a lot of NPCs or, you know, like,
mm-hmm,
or central character to the story that you'll meet later on as you go with the main quest. Like, I feel it feels a bit like that. Like, it's, anyway, it's such a good show. It is a good show, regardless of if you're a gamer or not. It's just a good show.
It is a little gross, though.
Yes.
That's okay.
Like, I wasn't expecting it to be kind of gross.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't think they would go to some places that they went.
Yeah.
So if you're like, you're a little squeamish, just like maybe just note that it's a little gross and maybe not plan to like be eat. For me, I was like, I don't really want to be eating while I'm watching
mm-hmm
the show, because it,
mm-hmm,
I eat while I'm like, I don't give a shit.
At this point,
like, I'm so desensitized to like,
if it's in a
show, because it's just like, oh, no, there goes the gore. Because
yeah,
it is, the point is like, of Fallout is that it's a very violent world. Like,
yeah,
as much as, you know, before the war, they were trying to like get that American dream going, you know, like,
uh-huh, mm-hmm,
you know, like 50s, 60s dream world utopia. Because of the wasteland, it goes like completely opposite direction. And it is now like back to the far west, a lawless land. People want to survive.
Yeah. It's survival. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it can get, sometimes you're just like.
Yeah. No, I get that completely.
Body parts are flying.
Yeah.
What can I say?
Yep.
I gotta tell Mike we gotta jump on that.
Oh, yeah.
He's gonna love it. I think.
Oh, yeah. I think he will too.
But like, I know you, Leah, like you loved like Sons of Anarchy, and I think you watched Westworld as well.
No, I never caught Westworld.
Okay.
I love Deadwood.
Deadwood.
Yeah. Deadwood's one of my favorites. Speaking of Westerns, I like spaghetti Westerns and Westerns and things like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think this one you'll get into because it's, the thing is, it's violent, but not violent for violence sake.
Okay.
It's violent to show you that the world is violent.
It's extreme.
Yeah, it's just a terrible place to be and a terrible situation to be in. But they, like, when somebody commits an act of violence, it's not just because they can or they feel like it.
Mm. It's not the Purge.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, and they do a good, they do a nice job of, like, because there's people, I mean, you learn about this in episode one, but like there's people that live underground in vaults, right, that want to, you know, be away, obviously, from what's going on in the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really interesting how they play upon like that theme of people that want security and protection and safety and
literally
peace.
The sheltered.
Yeah, literally.
Versus the
Yes.
Sheltered in every sense of the word.
Yes, versus like what's really out there and how those themes like collide and intertwine and get blurry. So I think even that was a really great, it was just very skill and like very masterfully. The storytelling is so tight and it's so good. So like it's a fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm excited then. I'm excited. Joelle, that was a
I know.
Full pack week.
I just had two weeks. I had to share it all.
You had
a lot
things.
Happened.
Yeah. Kat, what were you up to?
Well, on Sunday, we hosted our TTRPG session.
Yeah, and I hope you save some of that pesto Gouda cheese for me and want to ship it to Toronto, because, like, come on!
It was like, when I tweeted the photo, it was like two reactions. People were like, is that Irish Spring soap? Because the thing is,
it does kind of look like
it's very green. You can tell that the basil from the pesto really tinted the cheese.
Yeah.
So it looks green. Very green, but it doesn't taste as pesto-y as it looks.
No, it's probably just the dye, right?
It's
of
not...
of the basil, like the color from the basil. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's so when we went to the Netherlands, we went to ACMA, which is known to have like their cheese market in the spring and summer, and it's like that video I took of the guys wearing the little hat and just kind of like walking around with all the cheese, and
yeah,
where they actually do like a cheese market, and like company, you know, like restaurants come and buy cheese from the provider, and like I went to the little stalls around and I bought cheese, and it's like this stall, they had like three wheels of cheese for like €25. Each wheel was like a kilogram. Just like a shit ton of Gouda, and it came with one of them was nettle, which I didn't really taste the nettle. One of them was plain, and one of them was pesto. So, and because we were hosting, I was like, I'm gonna do like a charcuterie board, because I was out of sweets. The people at work ate all the stroop waffles and all the chocolate I brought back, which is okay. Like, it's, I bought it for that. I figured if by the time we get to our game, I have leftovers, I will offer them to my friend. But we were out, and the only thing I had left was that thing of cheese. And I was like, I'll make a charcuterie board. So some people mentioned there was not enough shit on it. I was like, because we're variety. I was like, listen, I had a $10 budget at the grocery store. And it was basically, I was building it around the cheese I brought from the Netherlands.
The fact that you already had the cheese was the kicker, because that's usually the most, like, we get this, like, honey cheese, and it costs, like, it's expensive.
Yeah. Like, honestly,
so damn good.
I got, so I had two cheeses. I had the one we brought back from the Netherlands, and I had, like, a local cheese called Saint-Paulin, which is akin to Oka cheese to people that kind of know, like, the cheeses here, but it was smoked. Ooh, and it was amazing. So it's not as, it's Gouda-ish, but it's not a Gouda, I don't think. Anyway, and I got that, like a small roll of that on sale. And I think like on sale, it was $10. Mm-hmm. Again, reminder, I got 3 kilograms of cheese for like €25 in the Netherlands. So it's, and I got like this little tiny thing of like 250 grams for $10.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, like to get as much cheese here, it would cost like something like $60.
Yeah.
Over there, it was €25. So, it's very expensive. So anyway, I did two cheeses. I did a few crackers, and I did some creton, Quebec representation, and some olives. I didn't want to get like a full like, hey. Like, usually when we do these things, we kind of bring chips and whatever.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be stuck with a bunch of, like, pickles and shit I won't eat after.
Yeah,
so.
No, I get that.
Wait, you don't like pickles?
I do, but I'm the kind of person that forgets we have them and then don't eat them.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right. They just go bad in the fridge.
Okay.
Yeah, like, mind you, with summer coming along, like, barbecue season, I would probably, like, take them out more or whatever. But it's, like, it's like, a lot of the pickled stuff, like, Pascal doesn't really eat. Like, you know, like, he doesn't eat olives. So after that, it's basically on me to snack on these things. And
yeah,
I'm not a big snacker.
I love pickles.
I saw a meme the other day. The reason why we millennials like charcuterie board so much is because of Lunchables.
Yes.
And I'm inclined to believe it.
I think honestly, that's true.
Honestly, yeah. Because basically that's what.
I like eating small stuff. I like tapas. I like lots of flavor. I like sushi. I like that. Like, that's how I like to eat, where I just like different flavors every bite. Even when I eat my meal, I eat it that way. I don't eat one thing and another thing and another thing. I like mix it up in patterns. Anyways.
Yeah. But it was, so, and for those who are curious, the game we play is Old Gods of Appalachia. So, yes, it is based on the podcast. And they made a TTRPG based on the Cypher system, and we've been playing for a while. It was our first game in a hot minute, because in February, Alba and Sarah went to France, and then in March, Pascal and I went to the Netherlands. So it had been a little while since we played, but we like to get to do a little session, have dinner together, order dinner in, and just discover the horrors that come from the inner dark.
Cool.
The Appalachia.
Very cool. Kat, I followed suit on the board game thing, so finally, now mind you, I realize I meant to mention this last week, but I forgot. But we played Hues and Cues.
Oh, and did you
Fun.
Win?
No, Michael won.
Okay.
This is not exactly as I anticipated, but borderline better. So, okay. The way that the game works is you have the board with all the colors and it's all gridded out, right? And then you have three pieces that are the same color that is your points. One of them you put on the board to track your points. The other two are guessing pieces. So when you go around in the circle, the person who picks up card gets four different color swatches on the card. And they coordinate to each one around the board. I thought you would get clues. No, you have to make up the clues. And you can't say the names of colors. You know, pink, red, blue, black, whatever. You can't say light or darker. So the first round is you have to say one word that affiliates with a color. So say I picked up a really orange one and I would be like, pumpkin. And so everybody, and they would go around in a circle and people could only put one, they each do one pass and they put their little piece on what they think I am interpreting the color pumpkin to be. And then you do another pass. But this time the question, I can give two words or I can do one word again of a clue, and you can't say lighter or darker. So you have to do something and you got to try and guide them in the direction you want them to go. Because the thing is you get points for how close you manage to get people to it.
Okay.
And then so after the second pass, then you put the little like slider thing down that counts it. If you get it dead on, you get 3 points for the people who are trying. If you get it dead on, you get 3 points. If you get the 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 around, you get 2 points. And if you're just outside of that, you get 1 point and everything else is no. And if you, the person giving the clues, you get points for every single person inside the square.
Okay. Hmm. Okay.
So, yeah. Sorry, it's 8 around, not 6 around. But anyways, it was really fun. And it gets hard because you can't use the same words again. You got to remember what you had said. So if I already said flamingo for pink, I can't use that again, right? You have to come up with another word. So you start getting really up to, and you're not allowed to point out things in the room either.
Okay.
Oh.
And it's tough because you look at the card and the card, the color is isolated. But then when you look on the board, you have to think about where it is in interpretation to other things. So like, say you had a purple color and it was a little bit more on the lighter side. You wouldn't want to say eggplant because someone might go to the darker of the purples, right? So you need to like think about where it is on the board. So it was a little bit of a learning curve there. But it was really fun to play. And we were laughing a lot.
What about like names of objects that are also names of colors? Like you can't say lilac.
Yes, you can. So they'll let you do those, like periwinkle, lilac, chartreuse, things like that. They'll let you go up kind of obscure like that, but they won't let you do like pink, orange, yellow, blue, black, white, red. You know, that kind of thing. If you said, I think violet would be okay, indigo would be okay, but I mean, it's up to you. The rules are pretty loose and you're playing it how you want to play it.
At the same time, how many people know that indigo is not navy?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, it was very entertaining. And then we started getting really foolish in what we were referencing as colors too. So yeah, I highly recommend it. But yeah, you want to make sure that you're playing with people who are not colorblind, because that could be really hard. But yeah, it's a good game. And then yesterday, I wanted to pass on a YouTube video that I found that I thought might be beneficial, especially if you like video game soundtracks and deep dives, and especially if you're into metal. There is a YouTuber that I follow that I'm sure I've mentioned before. His name is Finn McKenty. He does this YouTube channel called The Punk Rock MBA. And every Thursday, he usually puts out like a deep dive video on a topic. And last week's was How the Doom Soundtrack Changed Metal Forever.
Oh, wow.
Now, I knew that the Doom soundtrack was a big deal. Like, when it came out, everybody was like, Doom gang, like, were super excited about it. I knew about the issues that went down with Doom Eternal and how that went, but I didn't realize how pivotal the 2016 game, how important that music was, because apparently it was like really, really different for like the metal scene at the time to kind of come out. They even named a category of metal off of that style that Doom created called Argent Metal.
Oh,
wow. And, okay.
Yeah. And it's like this atmospheric kind of sound. Because originally, if you go watch the video, because it's fascinating. Originally, when they remade Doom and they wanted to do it, they asked Mick Gordon, the gentleman who designed the music, to like not do heavy metal. And he kept doing stuff. And they were like, no, it's not right. It's not right. It's not Doom enough. And it's because it didn't have like guitars in it. So it's like this like synthy metal sound. And like there's a lot of like metal bands now that have kind of like been inspired by the sound that came out of that game. And even lo and behold, Bring Me the Horizon ended up working with Mick Gordon on their 2020 album Post-Human Survival Horror. And because they like were inspired by that and Parasite Eve and a whole bunch of other video game soundtracks and things like that, and they discovered that Mick Gordon had done it and wanted to work together, so I believe he produced that album. So yeah, really fascinating stuff, especially if you're a nerd for music, and like I love the history of stuff, so you guys know that by now. So yeah, go check it out. It's called How the Doom Soundtrack Changed Metal Forever on the Punk Rock MBA, and enjoy.
I will. Hmm. I gave him a subscription. I'm like, this is my kind of shit.
Oh my god! Like the last few videos that he's done too, because they're usually like deep dives. Like he's done one on the unexpected rise of Sleep Token, the strange history of Papa Roach, the strange history of Dragon Force from Guitar Hero. Like metal peaked in the 2000s. This is why. Yeah. It's his stuff is really good. I highly recommend it. So take a gander at Finn's channel. That is the Punk Rock MBA. Yeah. Okay. So we're going to change things around a bit. We're going to look at the Fantasy Critic. Then we're going to do Walk Down Memory Card Lane. And then essentially topic of the show is going to be about all the games we've been playing. Because here we are saying we wanted to try and do a short episode because all of us have just been playing games, not necessarily paying attention to the news. And the recording time already says 38 minutes. I know that's not going to be the edit time, but still we have the gift gab. So let's look at the Podcast League and see, Fantasy Critic-wise, have we done anything? Has anything happened? Okay. I'm number one. Joelle's number two. Kat's number three. The next game that comes out that's currently purchased is Senua's Saga Hellblade 2 by Kat, but that's not until the end of May. Trying to see if there was anything that came out. No.
Did no one pick up Stellar Blade from us? I don't think anyone picked up on that.
That was a mistake on
But
our
how much
part.
Did it get? Did it get super high reviews after? Because I feel like it got like middle high, maybe.
I gotta look at the Metacritic. For PS Plus, for PlayStation, it got really high. Mm-hmm. But.
Yeah,
Yeah, it's 82. No history. Metascore was 82. Yeah, I was like, ooh, that did.
Yeah, I'm going to see who might have gotten it in the.
I need my games to like come out because.
Yeah,
I got a nice list, but no points.
No points. Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. You got a. I don't know, Kat. How you feeling about that Dragon Age?
it's got to come out. it's not. I don't care about the critic and how much I get.
No,
from,
I know.
Just need it. I need it to come out.
I understand. Like, I'm with you, but I don't. I don't know. I don't know if it's gonna.
Okay, so Jessica Starr got it on the nice. Community Fantasy Critic. She had Stellar Blade. Yeah, there was no other history, no changes or whatever thing from last week on our league. But yeah, I'm just digging into this one now. So yeah, 12 points picked up for Pugs and Pixels Games. Yeah, good. So in the league right now, it is Darth, Pat, IRR Gamer, Offshore Meteor, myself, Jessica Starr, Phoenix, Ross Vignier, Stainsby Kingsby, Elbang, and Zhang Pao. Let's see if anybody did anything. Did anybody pick anything up? Nope. Everything is still where it was. Cool. All right. Let's do Walk Down Memory Card Lane. Each week, the team will have to guess a historical game that would have released during the time of this episode's airing. We'll start with its release date, and then I will give hints about the game, and the team will attempt to guess what it is. As always, talk it out, ladies. All right. This game released on May 1st in 2014 in Japan, May 2nd, 2014 in North America and the EU, and on May 3rd in Australia in 2014.
Another 2014, huh?
Mm-hmm. Those 10-year gaps.
Hmm.
You're very quiet, Kat. Are you talking into the microphone?
Probably not.
There you go. That's better.
I was saying 2014 is PS3 and shit. So, no, not PS3, PS4. Fuck. I'm not going to get this, I don't think.
In May, in spring. I don't, yeah, I don't. And it's staggered release, so I don't know. Yeah, I'm...
Do you want another clue?
Yes, please.
It is.
This game released on the Nintendo 3DS.
Oh, come on.
on 3DS?
Yes, ma'am. 3DS.
Just on 3DS, okay.
Just on 3DS, yes.
Is it like Xenoblade Chronicles?
Nope. It is not.
Yep. Okay.
Another clip.
Is it,
she's got something. She's cooking.
Is it Zelda? Is it Zelda?
No.
Okay. I
forget the one where you get to go into the walls.
Into the walls.
Oh, yeah.
That was fun. Yeah.
That was a good game.
That was a good game.
It's a really good game.
Yeah, it was. All right.
Okay. Your next clue is it's a simulation game. Both Joelle and Catherine look at me with their heads tilted and their eyes wide, being like, "What tomfoolery are you pulling on me today, Mia?"
3DS sim game.
In
the 2014 era.
No. Is it Animal Crossing New Leaf?
No.
Shit. Yes. Then I don't know. a sim game on 3DS. Harvest Moon something?
Nope.
And it came out in Japan first.
Yep.
Mm.
By a day.
Yeah.
Fantasy Life?
Nope.
Damn it.
You want me to give you another clue?
Yeah.
I'm running out of games quick and fast.
Offers various gameplay modes, including standard tournaments, challenges, training modes, and online multiplayer matches. Think what else could be a simulation game?
Is it a Pokemon game?
No.
Online?
Player
hey,
matches.
Mario Kart 7, is it?
Nope.
Nation game.
I don't know.
Wow.
Sim game.
This is Call of Duty all over again.
I know.
Or that one we just didn't get. What was it? Picross?
Yeah.
Well, I also didn't get Minecraft. I don't know.
All right, I'm trying to... Sometimes I, like, find that I make the... Like, you guys get it so fast that I'm, like, trying to make it harder. So let me see if I can make it easier.
It's because I'm too lucky and I just blurt out a game and she's like, yes.
Yes, like, that is it.
And I throw games at the wall, so it's see what sticks. There's really no rhyme or reason.
Okay. There's a variety of courses inspired by the Mario universe.
Mario
as well as
Golf?
Some original courses. Yes, it's Mario Golf World Tour. World Tour.
Oh. I forgot that Mario also golfs. He does too many things.
He's an athletic powerhouse.
He's a very well-rounded plumber.
Yes. Yeah, he golfs, he tennises, he carts.
You know,
he goes in the Olympics, crying out loud. Yeah.
He's a painter. I don't think I quite, like, in my mind, sync up sim game with, like, the sports.
I know, I want that, but that's the key. See, the thing is you guys have gotten some of them so easily that I'm like, if I put sports simulation game and then start talking about courses and start talking about, like, weather and, like you're going to get it in a heartbeat, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to make some. There's no happy medium when I'm making these clues, so I just throw a whole bunch at the screen, and I'm like, I'm going to pick that and see how they do. And sometimes it's just one word that you guys get, and it, like, clicks, right? Yeah. It'll be one thing.
As soon as you said Mario, I was like, oh, it's Mario Golf. Like, I knew.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Nice.
Ladies, let's get into topic of the week, which is all around the games we've been playing. So we're going to do that right after this break. And we're back. Time to talk games, games, and more games. Why? Because that's what we've been doing, playing games. Catherine, how goes Horizon Forbidden West PC edition?
I am 13 hours in and I'm still at the very beginning. For me, that's an indicator that it's going great because, like I said, I am drinking every drop of content this game is giving me. I finally ventured into the West and into the true open world and saw, I was like, got my first like tall neck. There was like three quests in the way, so I didn't make it yet. But honestly, like mentioned it last week a bit, but like so far for me, seamless experience. It's been very good on PC. Works well enough with the Xbox controller, and I've been doing the thing where I just take my laptop, connect it to the TV via HDMI, and I play like a console pleb. And I didn't have to buy a PlayStation 5.
Hey, don't shame on us console flebs over here.
Oh.
Flebs, whatever.
I'm
a pleb.
I take no offense.
I'm a pleb.
I take no offense because I was enjoying mine really early on. So
now, in this game, is this where they introduced the swimming too? Or was that in the previous game?
No, this is the
game,
yes.
Eh?
Oh, yes.
We couldn't swim in previous games?
No.
I don't think it was in the first game. I thought that was the big thing. Yeah. And she got the water breathing apparatus.
Oh, yes.
Oh, she could swim, but she couldn't go, like, underwater.
No. I didn't even think she could swim.
I don't think there was any swimming.
There's no swimming. No.
Not at all.
I don't think
Zero
so.
Dawn?
No,
I
it
don't
was
think
climbing.
So. It was all land.
It was all the climbing and the gliding.
Yeah. Oh.
And then now she can swim underwater. And it's so... That sequence is
beautiful.
Phenomenal.
Beautiful. In one of the side quests in the intro, you do like do a bit of...
They introduce you to the swimming.
Where she does like some spelunking.
Uh-huh.
Basically.
Yes. Yeah.
Cave diving.
Yeah, but you don't. In the beginning of the first game, you do that. But I don't think you do that in a lot of the... Because she's a child, she doesn't, like, go underwater, I don't think. Or if she does, it's like a quick, like...
Yeah, it's not like this where you actually have, like, the lung mabobber thing.
Yeah.
I
have yet to get that because I am in side quest hell already.
I thought that's when you crossed over into the wild.
No, it's later.
Okay.
Yeah,
because I did, like, in the first area, like, around Barren Light, I did find a cave, and I tried to swim down, and the game was very much, you should come back, because you're going to die, and I was like, fair enough.
You
get the breathing apparatus as you're going into the, like, the spot where you're going to use it. I do not want to spoil.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Okay.
Because it's so good. So like, I don't want to. But like, you will know. Like, you'll get it, and then you'll be like, oh yeah, like we're fucking doing it. Yeah.
Because yeah. I feel like it's fairly early in the game, but it's not for Kat because she's a side quest fiend.
Well, yeah. Yes. Yeah. I guess for me, it kind of felt mid-game, but I did a lot of side questing, though. Like, I powered
through. Okay. I wanted to get to the good, and yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm taking a few, especially, like, when you meet somebody and they're like, hey, you get us this shit, we'll make you a weapon. I'm like, bet.
Yeah.
And then some more people are like, I'm trying to win a contest to make the best armor. If you bring me this, I'm probably going to make the best armor. And I'm like, I'm going to fucking wear it.
Yeah.
Deck me out in that armor. And it looks so goddamn good in that game.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
Darn it.
Because I'm playing on normal. And I'm getting my ass handed to me. I'm not going to lie.
You'll get your bearings again. It takes a hot minute.
Yeah, at first I was just like, oh no, they found me, whatever, I'll fight through it. And then one guy is just like, I have explosive ammo and you're dead. And I'm like, fuck you, bro.
Yeah.
So I kind of like, but also like, even if I'm only in the beginning of the game, I'm already doing the thing where it's like, why is things so hard? And opening the skill menu and realizing I have yet to spend a whole skill point.
Yep.
Yes. Litany of skill points to put on.
And then I'm just like, right.
Yeah.
I am notorious of that. We're all like, they'll introduce something to me and then I'll ignore it for hours. And then I'm like, why is this so wicked hard? Why can't I solve this puzzle? What? And then I'll go in the menu and I'll be like, oh, well,
and especially like this game, they're like doing combos.
Yeah,
so you can unlock like skills, and they're like, "Hey, to use this skill, do light attack, heavy attack, or heavy attack, light attack, and then shoot an arrow."
Yeah,
and then there's like valor surges that you can equip and use
Those
and things
are
like that.
Wonderful. Yes.
Yeah, but can you equip more than one?
Yes, you can do two.
Okay. Because I'm just like, they're, you know,
you
like,
get choices, right?
It's layered. Like,
you decide how you want to play.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
It's like becoming a very sophisticated combat system. And they're giving you more weapons this game. And some of them are OP as shit. And so,
like, I'm already like, got too many weapons for my wheel, man.
Yeah. But, but I love how then you get to customize really how you want to play.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. I just think they did such a good job.
I'm going for a definitely like a ranger type build.
Mm-hmm.
So heavy on the bow.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Grabbed a bit of the warrior stuff just to have good stuff with the warrior bow. So hunter bow, warrior bow, and sneaky stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'll get a long range bow or whatnot. Because with the hunter bow, I've been managing to, with the focus type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where you kind of zoom in and slow. I've been getting a few headshots this way. Nice. So when it comes to like doing the rebel camp and fighting against like humans, they don't see me and they get arrows in their eyeballs. And I'm just like, bye.
Oh, just wait. It's so glorious. Oh.
How much you're playing this so much like an Assassin's Creed, and I do that too. I play every game like that.
Listen.
Where I'm like, why go in and deal with tons of baddies when I can just ping them off from far, far away?
It's something. If games like every fantasy game I've played, like Skyrim and Dragon Age, have taught me, is that the OP build is a sneaky archer.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Always.
So I'm not going to play Horizon Zero Dawn differently. And when they did the revamp of Assassin's Creed, like for Origins and Odyssey and whatever, and now it's just like, not only are you sneaky, but you have like a classic bow and arrow.
Yeah.
I'm like, you think Bayek is going to be different than from my elf from Dragon Age?
No.
We're going to hide in a haystack, pop out, headshot people, pop back in, and then the guards are just going to be like, what the fuck happened?
Yep. And then whistle from the haystack.
Yeah.
What is that noise? I'm dead.
Alloy's the same. Throws a little rock. People are like, who threw a fucking rock? And They're dead.
Yeah, those are the best. I love it. It's just like, where's my rock? I gotta have my rocks. My rocks are like right next to my healing potions. Because it's like, I gotta make sure I have that full capacity and upgrade my pouch to carry more rocks, because that is my go-to.
Rocks.
I was having issues with like a boss fight because he kind of like fucked off and then never came back.
Oh.
And I had set traps and I was just like, dude. So
wasted my traps.
He one-shots me. I reload. I, of course, do the thing where I sneak back. And then the people around the boss, I one-shot with arrows in the head. And then I reset my trap. And then I lure him. I'm just like, come on, come on. And yeah, so he walks through the tripwire. And just like, ugh, and then I got him. And he's like, ugh, and then walks into my explosive trap, and boom, he's dead. And I was just like, fucking struggling for like 5 seconds until he dies, because like they got shields and armor, and you gotta shoot it off. And I'm just like, or hear me out, you could walk through a bomb.
Yep,
it's fantastic.
Yeah, you gotta plan. You gotta plan your shit, but it's just like, I'm also like such a looter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't give me all the stuff. I'm such a hoarder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, and
never spend it all. That might be good later. It's just like, not going to spend it. Yeah,
what happens if you're out of materials and you can't craft your traps? That never happens.
I know.
So always material for traps. Like, are you kidding me?
Always. Cool. Well, we'll be hearing about that game from Catherine for the next. 10 episodes.
So jealous.
Easily. This is like Baldur's Gate 3 and Persona 5.
This will be Catherine's game of the year. All right. Joelle has been playing Princess Peach Showtime. I know you did the demo, and then I think you might have talked a little bit about it while I was gone, because you got full access to the game, thanks to the lovely folks at Nintendo Canada. Mm-hmm. And now, are you done? I am done.
And what a joy that was. Like, I liked the demo, and then when I got the full game and started playing it, I did have to redo what I did, but I was just so happy that I loved being able to replay some of the levels, because I took a little bit of time to find more of the secrets. And so it was so great. This game is, it's abundant with experience. Like, I'll just say that, I know we talked about it a bit already, but I just want to give you some numbers here, is that there are 5 different levels in Princess Peach Showtime, and then each level has little theaters and, like, stories and plots that you go and play. So altogether, there are 30 of levels that you get to play and experience, and altogether Peach adorns 10 different costumes and personas. So, like, it's a lot, and all of the levels are unique in their story and their outcome. And so, like, maybe you'll be Cowgirl Peach for one or two levels, but it's not the same thing each time. It's a little bit different in how they crafted the levels. And the first level kind of gets you used to the mechanics of the combat or the interactive pieces. And then the next level, like, builds upon that. It's like, okay, well, I already know how to do this. And so they're going to give me something a little bit different to do, which I thought was really great as a player, especially a young player, because this game is geared towards younger players, like children. There's an action button and there's a jump button. Like, you only got 2 buttons. But I will say that it was challenging enough where I could definitely understand, like, how you would want to replay it as a kid, because you get the gist of it, and then you want to go back, and then you want to, like, find all the secrets, because sometimes the things move pretty quickly. If they're side-scrolling and it's an auto-scroller, you miss stuff, and it's like, I missed it. I want to go back and do it. And so there's so much content here, and there are 5 bosses in total. And I tell you, some of the bosses I didn't get right away. And I was like, this is a child's game. Like, why can't I understand this? So it took me a little while.
They can be so humbling sometimes, these games.
I know.
So I've played video games for how many years, and this is directed towards kids? Why can't I get good?
I take down cyborg dinosaurs in Horizon. Why can I not take down this boss made of cardboard? But the combat is great. The ending, I think, has a nice little twist, kind of a refreshing. This ain't your typical, Bowser showdown, I'd say. So I just think it was wonderful. And just big thanks to Nintendo for allowing me to play the full game. Like, if I had, a young kid, I'd want for them to play this game. So I think it teaches a lot of different great, game mechanics. Not just combat and running in motor skills, but with Detective Peach, you have to use some critical thinking to solve puzzles and mysteries. And then also with Patisserie Peach, there's designs that you have to copy and different friends that you have to help out. So I just think overall, the story is good. The message is good from the game. The mechanics are great. I think it'll be a sleeper, almost maybe a sleeper hit, because I know it didn't get maybe the greatest debut, but it really, really shines. So I just had a wonderful time, and apparently it was challenging enough for me, so.
What's interesting, too, is that, I feel like this game was very much designed with, young girls in mind,
yeah.
And as a legit, platforming game.
Yes.
And nothing was really directed towards us like that back when we all started playing video games, mm-hmm. right? Nothing.
No, nothing.
So
no, this is
the best you'd get would be Nintendogs or Cooking Mama or mm-hmm. whatever. Never was it totally just all about Peach. And mm-hmm. it's Peach's time right now between that and the Mario movie where she, wasn't the damsel in distress. It's cool. It's cool to see.
And
Oh
no, I was just going to say too, the story also isn't her saving any one person. They didn't flip it on its head and she has to go save the Luigi or she doesn't have to go save Toad. She is rolling through her castle trying to make peace again with someone that usurped her theater, and she has to don all these different types of characters, and some are classy, some are one of them's a thief and she's got to be sneaky, one of them's a mermaid where she's underwater and she sings, one of them is a interpretation of Mega Man of Mega Man.
Okay.
And she's the marvelous superhero, and one of them's she's a ninja. And I think it's interesting that all of the details are just so rich in the game too, but there is actually one costume where her makeup changes. And her coloring changes a little bit. So I really liked how they kept some familiar things of the character, but also weren't afraid to push it outside of that realm. And of course, figure skating Peach looks just like Elsa from Frozen. And that's amazing. Good job, Nintendo.
You know, that was on point.
Well, yeah,
totally strategically.
Exactly. Yeah, but it was really smart. So
yeah,
this game was excellent. If you have younger kids, boys or girls or whatever they're into, there's really something for anyone at that age because she takes on so many different personas. So I loved it. I'd recommend it for sure. I'm really glad I have it.
Sweet. And you're also playing Tales of Kinzera Zao? You picked that up afterwards?
I did. I picked that up afterwards because it came out on for PlayStation Plus. Subscribers.
That's true,
which
yeah.
was wonderful. Thank you, finally. a newer game that a game that you want to see come for PS Plus subscribers. So it came out, and I downloaded it, and Tales of Kinzera Zhao.
Is that how it's pronounced? Zhao?
I think so. That's how...
That's how they're saying it in the
I
game?
I think so, yeah, because it's a side-scrolling 2D platformer, kind of like Prince of Persia that just released, but it's made from Electronic Arts and Surgent Studios, and it's available on the Nintendo Switch, PlayStation, Windows, Xbox Series X and S. And it follows the story of a young shaman named Zhao who must capture the spirits of three monsters as offerings to Kalunga, the god of death, who promises to revive his father. So when you open up the game, you realize that Zhao has lost his father due to illness. And the game is about like trying to get his father's spirit back and revive him, you know, through these quests. So it's a very touching and engaging story right off the bat. And Zhao's shaman abilities is he has a sun mask, which allows him to fight like with blades and to use throwing spears. And then also the power of the moon, a moon mask, which allows him to shoot blasts of ice and to freeze water and enemies. So you depend upon these combat skills to go through the world like a Metroidvania game. And the world is beautiful. The 3D animation is gorgeous and engaging. They also have, when you do dialogue, like the character cards kind of pop up, like we've been referring to, like Hades style. And as the characters go back and forth in dialogue, their nature changes and there's little animations to go with it. So if they're excited or angry or disappointed, so that's kind of nice to see their emotions come through that way instead of doing it through smaller characters like in the scene. So I will say, like, it's a great story. It's cool kind of to dive into, like, a different type of culture and a different type of lore, going with, like, the African theme. South African theme, I should be more specific. I will say that I wished, you know, I was kind of expecting it to be, like, an Ori of the Blind Forest type of Metroid game where... or even as maybe complex as Prince of Persia. And I will say that it doesn't have, like, that much complexity or depth in combat skill. While there's still, like, skill trees and you gain spirit points that you can spend to upgrade your abilities, you can get through the game without having to do those. So the platforming and the gameplay, I would say, is a bit more simplistic, and so I don't need to quite have to dig in to be like, where was that one item that I have to go back to, or you know, I don't have to remember exactly what other piece that I need to finish this quest. The game really helps you along in that way. So if you're looking for more of like a chill Metroidvania type game. Something where you can, you know, brush up on your traversal skills or combat skills. Like this would be a great game to do that with.
Cool. Yeah, I've been looking forward to this one too. It's funny. I feel like that it's kind of a theme this year that we're seeing is this Metroidvania, revival of the mm-hmm. Metroidvania mm-hmm. kind of. Or at least it feels like there's more... in the front half of the year. Curious to see kind of what pops off the second half of the year as we get closer to that. But yeah, this, and like you said, pretty keen on learning about a different culture through game as well.
Yeah, and I've heard that folks are really pleased with the way that they've done some lore developing and done some mythology. And so, like, you know, it's not just... You don't just have to watch Black Panther to get this kind of flavor. So if you know, if you mm-hmm. want to do something a little bit different and learn maybe a little bit more like legit lore, I mean, this is the games. But if you loved the movie Black Panther, like you're gonna like this game because this game is really close in that kind of style, even and the lighting and things like that. So it was fun. It was great.
Nice. Excellent. On my front, I'm still making my way through Dave the Diver. Most recent thing that I'm getting into is I now have a branch. So apparently now I have multitude of sushi shops that I have to manage. But yeah, obviously there was a whole slew of games that came out while I was away, and I was sitting watching the hockey game on Saturday night, and I was... Well, I mean, watching. I mean, it's kind of hard to watch the Leafs sometimes, especially when they're losing like they are. And I was flipping through Game Pass on my phone, and I noticed that Botany Manor was there. And I was like, oh, yeah, I wanted to check that one out. So I downloaded it Saturday night, and I think I made through most of it yesterday. I probably have just a little bit left, I think. So Botany Manor is a puzzle game where it's set in 1890, and you are a retired botanist named Arabella Green, and you just inherited a Somerset manor, and you're trying to research plants in preparation of publishing a book about the world's forgotten flora. Asterisk, this is 1890. You're a female. Science doesn't really want you there. Oh. So just put that into perspective when you're reading through some of the stuff. So yeah, the game is essentially a puzzle game. Reminds me of Myst. You're walking through, you're finding things, reading notes, picking up clues, getting a seed for a plant, having to use the clues to figure out what kind of conditions does this seed need in order to blossom into a flower. And there's a multitude of these throughout your course of your time as you're wandering through the manor, trying to solve it and try to produce this book. So the book is like essentially your tracking system of how you're going through. There is the outside garden inside the manor itself. There are three floors, I believe, to the manor. And you're point and clicking your way around, scenarios that you never ever would have thought would have been a thing with plants. Like, of course, there's like soil, water, air, temperature, you know, that kind of stuff. But then also thinking about pH levels of soil, or what does a mushroom need to help, you know, how does that garner nutrients, and how can that puzzle be solved? Music is involved because of the way birds chirped in the environment it came from. So yeah, like, it's really intriguing way to kind of maneuver your way around this puzzlescape. It's gorgeous, beautiful, of course. It's called Botany Manor. You gotta be like, this is attractive. And it's got like this cartoony vibe that's like kind of simplistic in a lot of it, but the clues and then the book and the illustrations of the books are pretty, look like watercolor paintings. And yeah, it's just super attractive to look at and not so wicked hard like Myst that I found back in the day that I could never figure it out. It's just the right amount of puzzle that keeps you driving for more. And it just kind of starts to... The complication is, yes, you're learning stuff, but then they also kind of start overlaying puzzles on top of each other. So the first one, you're doing like just one plant, and it kind of opens you up. And then you've got two plants and two sets of clues going on at the same time. And then maybe you have like a lot more, like four plants going with four sets of clues that you're trying to solve. All the way down, I think I have three plants left to do, because there's actually like every so often around the manor, there will be almost like a flower potting station where you get your pot, you got to put your soil in, there's a seed box with marked which ones you've got, which ones there's boxes left for ones you don't have yet. And then you put your seed in, you water it, and then you need to figure out, well, how do I make it flower? And yeah, it's really interesting and a really good kind of like just a break from other games, because like I said, I've been playing Dave the Diver a lot. I'm in the thick of it now. Like, I think I'm getting closer to endgame. And this was just like a nice Sunday afternoon, springtime as it is right now, thinking about, you know, getting flower pots out in my front yard. And so I was like, let's try this. Because it seems to be a theme for me this year is either something to do with fishing or something to do with flowers. So yeah, I'm keeping my trend strong for 2024. And Botany Manor, and I will probably have it finished in the next day or so. So I'll tell you how my, you know, my full kind of like stamp of approval. But right now, I've got it. I think you guys would like it as a nice kind of breather from another game if you're looking for something to just kind of be like a quick snippet, a weekend or something like that of a game.
Yeah, the only thing, like I'm looking at it, it looks amazing, but it's like the only thing for me is with these first person like low poly 3D games, they're notorious for making me motion sick.
Oh really? I don't find this one's pretty easy, I gotta say. Easy on the eyes. Yeah. I haven't had any I'm not good with first person too, and this one has not caused me any issues.
Oh. I might see. I'll at least watch the trailer. Because sometimes just with the trailer, I can figure it out. Yeah, I was going through this
too, so you can test it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Well, folks, it's been a lot of games this week, and there's still more coming. I've got like a list of stuff still on my Game Pass, and I've got Dredge there waiting for me once I finish Dave the Diver. But there's no shortage of games to be played, and when May ends, then June starts. And you know what happens in June? Summer Game Fest.
Summer Game
Fest. Which means we get announced.
I was
going to
say,
all these
summer
games.
I know, I was like, not E3. That's what came to my mind, too. I was like, well,
nope.
Not that.
Summer Game Fest and the epic amounts of press conferences and whatever else. I know that the ID at Xbox happened today. Still need to catch up on that. Only watched part of it today because of work. But yeah, we'll, of course, catch you up on all of that in the next episode, because this episode is now closing. And with that, please check out the show notes on girlsongames.ca for links to all the stories or YouTube videos or whatever else may be that are tied to this episode. Catherine puts that together for us every week, with Joelle helping out now too. So much appreciated to you ladies for doing that. If you have the power to rate and review podcast on the podcasting platform where you are consuming this, that would be much appreciated. Why it helps with discovery pushes us up in the listings. And if you have comments and stuff, we do use those to help us build our show. So much appreciated if you leave a comment. I'd like to take the moment to thank the ladies for being on the show with me again this week. It was nice seeing you both. And here's a moment to shout out your social media handles so people can follow you anywhere and everywhere online. Catherine, where can people find you?
I am, for a photo of the charcuterie board and see the green cheese that kind of looks like soap, CSDBNS on Instagram, Thread, Blue Sky, X. But come shitpost with me in the Girls on Games Discord.
Joelle, how about you?
People can find me on Instagram at JoelleLauren87 or on X at Gamer_Comfy. But all day, every day, posting in the Girls on Games Discord. Come say hi.
And I am Leah Jewer, most social media platforms. But of course, you want to know everything there is to know about Girls on Games. You can track us down at The Girls on Games on X and Facebook. Just Girls on Games, no thought in there, on Instagram and Threads. Discord.me/Girls on Games to continue this convo and much, much more. But of course, if you ever want to know anything at all, you can track it down at our home base. That is our website, girlsongames.ca. Thank you, Kat. Thank you, Joelle. It's been another lovely week in gaming. And I guess I'm off to discover some more plants.
Get it.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye. Bye.